to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Riley. This is Brett Weber on the board. S&P futures are down 4. Dow futures down 36. The Nasdaq futures up 7. This was, again, after an update yesterday. Just as a way of review, we're very, very strange stuff. Dow was up 138. S&P up 16. Nasdaq up 53. So we just can't seem to head the other direction, which we have a bit under the market. And it's... not going to say that's bad. It's just a little bit puzzling that if the Fed is actually going to pull back on their largesse, which I don't believe for a second, actually, if they are going to pull back, you wouldn't expect interest rates to be going down. You wouldn't expect market to be going up. It's a very, you know, it's sort of an interesting phenomenon that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Yes, you do.
How are you, bud?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Did you watch the final 4-hour game of the year of baseball last night?
I made it to the 8th inning before falling asleep.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad. Yeah,
that's impressive. Yeah, I mean there wasn't a lot else on, but that's still pretty good.
Everybody,
well, you also have to keep in mind that I'm on Eastern time, so
that's even better.
Yeah,
you should be thoroughly impressed that a man of my age could stay up that late.
I think it ended at 10:45 or 10:50 Central Time last night because I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did watch the ninth inning because I wanted to see the final out and celebration and everything. But what time did it start exactly?
Well, it started at 7:09, right?
Wasn't it like a
7:09?
So that one wasn't as bad then, it's still 3 hours.
I'm trying to think if it was a 7 o'clock or an 8 o'clock start here.
It was 7:09 Central, so I think it was 8:09 your time.
Yeah, so it was 8 o'clock. Yeah, 8:09.
So that was actually a quick one, but for this series, because it was only about 3 hours and 40 minutes.
Who's the pitcher?
My God, I think that's how long it took Jorge Soler's home run to land.
Yeah.
That was launched. That was launched like Crash Davis was the catcher, and he told the hitter what was coming.
What was it? Anything that moves that fast, you really have a stewardess on it?
Yeah.
Garcia was pitching, and I'm sitting there. This was even, I met my attorney buddies, my gang were watching the game last night up at the Tripoli. So I, of course, pull out my cell phone. I figure out how to use the stopwatch in there, so I'm not a total Luddite, Kevin. So the guy pitches, I hit the stopwatch button. It was 42 seconds to the next pitch. This is in like the first inning. Second inning, I'm going, this is going to be a real long game. Well, they must have got him out of there.
He pitched a shutout. He didn't go the whole way. I don't know how many innings he pitched. I'll have to pull it up. But he pitched well.
Well, I mean, a foul ball is now a huge rest for both the batter and the pitcher. It's just the game is just not designed to be like that. I don't think, but maybe.
Well, the game is played the way it's designed, given the state of the art at any time, and so you're going to see things swing back and forth and back and forth a lot. The response to all of the stuff that they figured out about launch angles and how they do the swings and the value of home runs has been, this is the first year that I've seen big adjustments to it, where they've gone back and now they're getting guys out high in the strike zone and the umpires are calling high strikes. If you're trying to swing for a launch angle, that's really, really difficult. And I think you're starting to see the teams succeed most that put the bat on the ball. Rather than swing for the downs every time, so that to me that's a big change. That means that now there's they're coming back with. with, you know, the max effort on pitching too. That's the other thing, is they're saying if I march five or six guys out there every game and they are all just giving me the max effort on every pitch, I don't care if they only go three innings. That's fine. It works. But that'll come back as well, because then when people are starting to put the bat on the ball, if they start to run you through eight pitchers instead of six, that's going to be difficult too. So you're going to have to see the pitching adjust.
Okay. Where do we get back to?
Every sport goes this way.
Where do we get back?
You have some rule changes that affect it, but more than anything else, you have the way the people play the game gets it adjusts back and forth.
The only way the speed of the game is fixed is if you do a pitching clock. That's it.
I am all for a pitching clock.
Yeah,
yep.
That's.
I already think that they've made some inroads by limiting mound visits. I think that's a good rule, and forcing pitchers to pitch to three batters unless they finish an inning with fewer batters. I think that's a good rule too, to speed it up. But there's still more to do. Yep, I think the pitch clock is the way to go.
I mean, this is even young people, it's been a topic for Chief for 15, 20, 30 years that the game's too slow. But even modern young people, not that Chief's not modern and young, are starting to say the same thing. You can't expect a person to sit there for 4 hours unless your team's in it. I mean, when the Cubs were in the World Series, it actually made it very tense and enjoyable, the ups and downs and the intensity between each pitch. But if you're just watching as a baseball fan and you don't have a rooting interest, you cannot watch six games like that. You can't. Where they're averaging 4 hours.
No, you're not going to do it. But when you say young people, what age group do you mean? Because you definitely do not mean Tom Hull.
I don't know. I mean, young people are more optimistic, I'll just say that. And when they started complaining about the length of the game, I'm talking about young baseball fans. When they started complaining about the length of the game.
But what are you talking, 25-year-old baseball fans?
Sure, yeah.
Because, if they're trying to win over fans in their 20s, it's too late.
That's true.
You need to win over fans when they're, starting when they're 5 years old.
And I don't know if they have any 5-year-old fans.
Well, their problem with that is I think a lot of kids go play baseball. You know, parents get their kids into T-ball and then into baseball, and I think there's a fair amount of that. The problem is that so many of these games, especially the big ones, are on at a time when the 10-year-old fan is not going to watch it. You know, a 10-year-old fan wasn't going to stay up and watch last night's game unless he had baseball fanatic parents and they were in Atlanta or Houston.
Yeah.
Well, I think that there's.
I think that's where they're losing the fans. They think they need to please the 22-year-olds. They need to please the 12-year-olds. That's where they need to go if they really want to grow the game.
When I was 12, I watched every game. I watched every single game when I was 12, and a lot of them were at 120 back then. And I loved it, and I never once thought the game was slow, I never thought anything was wrong with the game. I thought it was a perfect game, and. You know, the game probably was faster back.
It was way faster
in the late 80s, early 90s. But it's not like it was 2 hours. It was probably 2 hours and 55 minutes. And now it's
three hours and 15 minutes. No way.
I mean, I can look this up, but
you can. But
okay, call it 2 hours and 45 minutes.
I don't think it was even that
In 1990. I mean,
maybe 1990.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Two and a half to 2:45. I think Tom was pretty routine.
I would agree.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes games were done in 2 hours on occasion. You know, like a Greg Maddux game. There were maybe more pitchers that pitched like Maddux, where they just got the ball and pitched.
Or, and I'm willing.
Mark Burley, you know, guys like that. But so there were more of those. But I think typically it was, you had to leave time for Don Drysdale to bean a few guys on purpose.
I'm willing to bet that playoff games in 1988 to 1995, when I was like in my, age 5 to 12, really starting to get into baseball, like the target Kevin's talking about, I bet those playoff games lasted longer than the regular season
too. Only if Carlton Fisk was catching.
But that said, my point is that, okay, call it, 2 hours and 40 minutes, whatever it was. That's not 4 hours. I mean, there's a big difference there. And
If your ass is in a
every other sport is between 2.5 and 3 hours, and for some reason baseball is now 4.5 hours, and that's a big difference.
There's
than football and basketball.
Massive difference if your ass is in a seat at a stadium. You can sit there for 2.5 hours. You can't sit there for 4 without getting up and walking around or doing something. I mean, you just can't. It's just too long. I think what happened, Matty. I mean, I don't have a lot of proof here. But I'm going to say part of the difference between, say, 60s baseball or 70s baseball and 1990 baseball, a lot of that was the length of time between innings, that you would get a hell of a lot more time between innings for commercials on playoff games than you did on a 120 Cub game in a Wrigley Field in the afternoon. So I think some of the stretch was for marketing and stuff. But now, I don't know if that's changed at all. Now it's absolutely within the game. But if you try and, I did this experiment 2 weeks ago. I did the world's, one of the playoff games was on. So I watched the Bears, and I was, you know, I paused a half hour ahead, and I came back, and you can buzz through football. It's all commercials. It's all time, it's all replays, that kind of crap. The actual play is, You can, if you have your little fast forward, I can do this. Baseball, you can't do it because it's the game itself that's slow.
So, the Baseball Reference has average time of game per year going back to the history of baseball. So, 2021 is the worst of all time. 3 hours and 11 minutes is the average length of a Major League Baseball game in 2021. Obviously, we know the playoff games are lasting.
Yeah, I'm saying, even that is somewhat palatable, but 4 isn't.
Right. 1990, like I said, 2 hours and 51. So, you know, my whole life, it was always about 2 hours and 50 minutes and to 3 hours. That was the length of a baseball game. Now it's 10, 11 minutes longer. So it didn't feel that different. The playoff games are approaching 4 hours, 4.5 hours every single time. And I know there's some extra commercials, but it is the on-field play, and it's just getting unwatchable.
Well,
but to act like there's like an hour and a half difference in the average time of a baseball game between now and 35 years ago, that would be incorrect. It's about 20 minutes, which is still a long time, but it's not an hour, or not an hour and a half, anything like that. 1960, the average length of a baseball game was 2 hours and 38 minutes. So, you know, from 1960 to 1990, it went up another 13 minutes.
I'm gonna say that there's massive differences. I mean, I know you're
13 minutes of difference.
I know you. Well, you know what? The last four games,
massive. That's a big percentage.
The last four games, I went to Sox Park. The game started whenever the hell it started. 7:11 it was for a while. It's 10 o'clock. It's the seventh inning, and I'm leaving for home. That's insane. That never happened 20 years ago, unless it was an extra inning ball game or something.
There's definitely. I think you're right. I think the average is one thing. I think that the long games are really long.
Well, the other night, the last game in Atlanta, it was an hour and a half, and it was a third inning.
Well, the White Sox and Astros had a similar game where it was an hour and a half, and it was top of the third.
I mean, you can't.
But those are playoff games.
What I'm saying is there's a certain rhythm to this. I mean, what would you guys think? You know, suppose I work out all winter, and all of a sudden I'm back on the mound next summer, and I'm pitching for Matty Weber's the Mudville Nine. And every time I got the ball, I wandered around and looked at the sky and did a bunch of crap, and I took 25 seconds between pitches. You'd say, throw the goddamn ball.
Absolutely.
There's something.
We're with you.
There's a rhythm to this that I'm saying they're way out of rhythm. I would like to play outfield for one of these guys. What if you got a couple mosquitoes out there biting your ass?
Well, basketball is the best because there's a clock, and every game lasts about the same amount of time unless you have like a crazy 5 overtime game. So if you're going to a Notre Dame game and it starts at 7 o'clock, you know it's going to be done by 9.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. It always has been.
Well, hockey's same
and
way.
And that has a crap load of TV interruptions, and it's still always done by 9.
Well, hockey's
the
best.
The TV interruptions in college basketball are totally predictable too.
That's true.
That's the other thing is you know exactly when they're coming, and because every 4 minutes at the under 16, first whistle after 16, first whistle after 12, etc. And there so you get your 2 or your 2.5 minutes, whatever it is, at that time, and then you're on. So everything, you know, from a timeout standpoint, until you get to the end of the game when the coaches might use up all their timeouts, and that'll drag it on. But if they're doing that, it's also a close game and a little bit dramatic, so it's not as bad. But what Matt's describing is exactly why I like, you know, going to college basketball, having college season tickets, because you're in and out of there. It's 2 hours. The parking is not, it's not terrible to get in and out of it. So, you know, I probably do the whole thing, leaving home to returning home in 3 hours.
Well, I think you see that in little kids' sports too. First time that I was never a soccer freak at all. I've never played any of it. And all of a sudden, the first thing parents start telling me, hey, these little league games are interminable, and a soccer game, I know it's over in an hour. I can drop them off back an hour, and it's over. I mean, a lot of it has to do with that. But on the money side, though, when do you reach the point? I mean, this is the people who sponsor this stuff. Say it was Stocks and Jacks. Say it was PTI Securities. It was going to put some commercials. Do I really want a commercial in the eighth inning of a four-hour game? Or, I mean, what is a snooze-o-meter in front of people's TVs? I mean, you're going to put this entire playoff, you're going to put a commercial out at the top of the night, and unless I woke up for that inning, I wouldn't have seen one of them. Now, I'm not your target audience, probably, but can you overwhelm the thing to the point where nobody even listens? And you go to the stadium, and the thing is constantly racking some kind of commercial at you. Can you overload people to the point where they're no good? I don't know. I mean, I'm not a marketing guy, but is it to the point where you overrun the whole system? It becomes just a big mirage. You don't even know what the hell you heard. I mean, is it worth it for these people to put these games on like this? I mean, now they're going to have some ratings. Are ratings still done, Manny, by people put meters in their TVs and stuff, or is it all done by the cable now? They can tell what people are watching. How do the ratings even work?
Tell exactly what you're watching. Yeah.
Okay. So it's they don't even pay people with a Nielsen meter in their TV anymore. Is that what you're telling me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but nobody knows if anybody's in the room, right? Wasn't there another someone along the line? I mean, how many years ago? I know Nielsen put some kind of they added to their machine that they could tell if anybody was in the room and how many people were in the room. So the ratings were adjusted better. Isn't that right, Manny? That they, instead of just having the TV being on, they could tell how many people were watching it or something? Now, how does that work now if the cable just knows where it's on, unless they're filming you, which maybe they are?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm talking about TV ratings.
No, I know what TV ratings are. I don't know anything about how they could track who's sitting in your living room.
I'm saying Nielsen.
If you have people over, if you're sitting by yourself, I have no idea.
Well, Nielsen they used to put an actual box in your TV, right?
Right. But you would do a survey. I mean, so whatever you would tell them, if you told them anything, or if you would just check WGN every day, and that's how they would get ratings on the radio. And then they found out no one was actually listening.
Well, that was the radio.
Now right. They actually know what you click on, how long you click on it, when it goes off, when you change it.
No, I'm saying traditionally TV ratings were different than radio. They actually would pay people. They'd send to put a box in your TV to track what you were listening to, what time.
Yeah, right. you could be a Nielsen family. And yeah. Yeah, they'd send you a box before had the boxes. They had people fill out surveys.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm saying they couldn't tell if you were sitting in the living room. They could just tell if the TV was on.
It's at some point they made an advancement.
Nothing has changed,
right? And I am sure that they just use a statistical model to say,
yeah, of course.
You know, typically, you know, some places one person's going to watch this, some places four people are going to watch it, and they probably just applied a statistical average to it so that and they could survey to come up with that number is and. So take the number of households that had the television show on, multiply it by 1.2 or 3.4 or whatever the number is, and that's how many people you would estimate watched it. Because it's all an estimate anyway, so you might as well just, you know, continue to run that as long as it's statistically valid. But they could also tell you how many households had it on as well as how many people they believe watched it.
Okay, so how did this series... What's the prelims on that, Manny? Have you seen any of this stuff yet? I have not.
On the World Series?
Yeah.
I haven't. I'll look.
So, Kevin, what do you think of the elections yesterday? This thing in Virginia is interesting.
Yeah, I'm actually not surprised based on the momentum of the last week that Youngkin had. I think a lot of people, and me included, you know, said, you know, the polls are telling us that this has a really good chance to be an upset. But you also never know until in a close race until it actually happens. Especially, you know, McAuliffe's not an incumbent, although he has been the governor there before. But he's got an incumbent party and a well-known political name and a lot of money behind him.
What happened to the current governor? Is it term limits, or you just didn't want to run?
I don't know why he didn't. I don't know why he didn't run another time. I'd have to go back and see. I don't know if Northam replaced him or how that works. Or maybe it was when he left to run the DNC. This is a guy who never in a million years should have lost. He's in a Democratic state and is, you know, like one of the world's most connected guys in terms of political affiliations. There is no way he should have lost, and yet he did. So I think part of that is his own fault for some of the things he said along the way. I think part of it is I sent you the NBC News poll stuff that the electorate just doesn't think things are going well at all in any aspect of political in the sphere of political influence, and I think they took it, you know, they're taking it out. I mean, New Jersey is still up in the air. I heard this morning they were like 50 votes apart, and that's another state where, you know, Murphy should have, you know, should be winning by 10 points.
I
think the electorate is sort of giving the Democratic Party the finger right now.
Well,
I don't know if that's going to hold for another year for the midterms or if things will change. But right now, people are not happy. Not happy with inflation, not happy with COVID restrictions, not happy with mandates, not happy with, the way things went in Afghanistan. You know, there's just a long list of things that haven't been going well. And we talked about, economic stuff back, in January when Biden was taking office and said, you know, the economy is going to grow because we're coming out of, all the lockdowns and all that. If they just let it go for a while and do nothing, they could just pat themselves on the back and take credit for it. But we did have inflationary pressures all along, so I'm not doubting that, but they just went and poured gasoline on the fire, and now it's just totally out of control. It's gone, just in the last month, it's gone from people thinking it was transient to saying, oh shit, it's, oh shucks,
yeah,
it's here.
Well, it's been, well, to me it's been obvious all along, but it's because I look at stuff you're not supposed to look at anymore. But here's the situation I sort of don't want us to be in, Kevin, and I think we are. And I learned this from your buddy Newt Gingrich, said that the Trump phenomenon is just a follow-up to the Obama phenomenon, where people were unhappy with Washington, so they bring in a guy who didn't have a chance to be co-opted, good-looking, well-spoken guy. Obama, you know, he looked like he was another, you know, Jack Kennedy, only didn't mess around on his wife. And all of a sudden, he became co-opted faster than anybody ever. So then, in Newt's mind, it was the next thing was, let's get somebody, a totally bombastic sort of guy from the outside that didn't have anything to do with Washington and actually knew where the skulls are buried because he'd been paying the people off forever. So they bring in Trump, and that didn't work either. So now we're in a situation where every single election, we're just going for change. Now, I will bet anybody right now that in the midterm elections, the Democrats get annihilated. So then all of a sudden, now we've got two houses of Congress. We still got Bowen, Biden, but there's a huge problem with that too. You never get anything accomplished there either because there doesn't seem to be any solutions. We just keep changing people.
If they get gridlocked in Washington, I'm pretty much fine with it because when they're not gridlocked, I don't like what they do.
But the gridlock, no matter whether it's gridlocked or not, the momentum towards a fascist economic system with a few firms controlling everything, with a few people, the management class making all the money, the owners not even doing as well, That is absolute suicide for this economy, Kevin, in the long run, and it's right where we're headed. We're going that way. Like, if somebody's planning it, and I don't know if anybody's smart enough to be doing the planning, but that's right where we're going. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures up 15. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 275. NASDAQ Futures up 1425. Now, this is the second day of the two-day Fed meeting. So we have the announcement today. We have the press conference this afternoon. And we're going to talk about tapering, which has been telegraphed. In the last 2 weeks, the Fed's put $80 billion onto their balance sheet. They're going to come out today and tell us they're going to cut back by $5 billion a month. I think we should go over to Lake Michigan and pee in it, Maddie, and overflow the locks. What do you think? Just saying.
a lot of pee.
Yeah, I have to have a lot of pee. Dow Futures down 43. Individual stocks. Yesterday, I think it was Avis, was up like $100. Now, this morning, it's Bed Bath & Beyond. They're up $9.60 to $26. So they're basically up, 50-60%. Somewhat of a short squeeze. Somewhere along the line, somebody's going to mortgage his house and buy into one of these things because they read that everybody's going to buy it and they're going to be the only one that buys it. And they're going to lose $100,000 and it's going to take them 33 years to write that off on their taxes and they're not going to be happy. Just saying. I hope it's not anybody we know. I hope it's not anybody, but certainly not anybody we know, and it won't be one of my clients, that I can guarantee. I guess they could do something somewhere else. But DAX down 3, call that flat. FTSE down 21.3%, CAC around up 7.1%. So quiet in Europe ahead of the Fed meeting, like we are quiet. In Asia, we got the Nikkei down 120. They were not open yesterday. They're not open today. Last was 11.2. Today is 11.2. They're down 126, the same number 2 days in a row. So they were up 600 2 days ago, and then they're down 123 yesterday and 126 today. So they've given back 40% of that. Shanghai down 7, call that flat. Hang Seng down 74.3%. So moderately bearish over in Asia yesterday again. Dow was up 138, S&P up 16, NASDAQ up 53. Even though we were up, down during the day a couple times. Bonds, 10-year, 1.53, again, down fairly significantly from the 1.61 earlier in the week. One minus 0.18 now. They got to minus 0.08, so in Japan, positive 0.07, so they're down as well. So despite the Fed coming out today with this well expected, we're not going to taper. The fact is, central banks around the world are putting money into the market, into the world this week. So, again, do they speak with forked tongue? I don't know. Oil down 178, it's the whole 2%. Brent down 162, 83.10. Natural gas up a penny to 555, right in the middle of the range now. 609 down to 498, back to $6, back to 520, now back to 555, so right in the middle. RBOB, minus 5 cents to 239. We've got gold down 350 at 1785. It's still stuck in this range between like 1780 and 1800. Silver up 13 cents, 2364. Copper up 5 cents, 441. And we've got Bitcoin down 316, but still over 63,000 at 63,173. Maddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start here on a Wednesday morning. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are all quiet. Off the expressways, there's a multi-vehicle accident at Grand Avenue and North Wolf Road out in the near western suburbs. So keep that in mind. And then in the southwestern suburbs, Lamont Road, right off I-55, there is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, another sunny but very cool day, similar to what we've been dealing with all week. Partly cloudy skies with a high of just 45. Right now it is clear and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 59. In sports, the Atlanta Braves are your World Series champions. First time for them since 1995. They shut out the Astros last night 7-0 and won the best of seven series 4-2, clinching on the road down in Houston. So congrats to the Braves and their fans. NBA basketball, Bulls were off last night. They're back in action tonight to take on the 76ers on the road in Philadelphia. Bulls are 6-1. That game will tip off at 6 p.m. Central Time. Suns played last night. They beat the Pelicans 112-100. Blackhawks are back in action tonight as well. They'll host the Carolina Hurricanes at 7 p.m. Central Time. Coyotes played last night. They were shut out by the Flyers 3-0. Chief.
What's the attendance been for the Hawks? Your idea?
I mean, I assume really, really good. I don't know. I think those tickets are pretty well sold out in advance, so I think the attendance is very good for those games, but I'd have to check.
Yeah, I wonder if they're still sold out like they were for a long time. We'll see. I mean, it's a little harder to go to the stadium now, right?
How so?
Well, women can't bring purses, you can't bring...
They've eliminated, unless you have just like a wallet-type little purse where you can only fit like a wallet in there, they've eliminated all bags for women, which is weird, and that's a United Center policy, not a Blackhawks, but that's interesting. Blackhawks are third in the NHL in attendance in 2021 so far, averaging 18,900 fans.
They're in the ticket sold group.
Well,
too, right?
That's how they all are. So they're at 96% capacity.
So nobody gives you the no-shows. Nobody gives you the amount of people in the place.
If you're buying Blackhawks tickets at $150 a pop, you're not no-showing. I can tell you that. It's not like a $40 baseball ticket. Those are expensive.
And people split them up, too. I mean, so you get your four or five games or 10, and I think everybody goes. I'm with you on that.
I mean, it's just too expensive. It's like no-showing a Bear game. I mean, it can happen if someone gave you the tickets for free, but someone paid for those. They're expensive, and you're not going to just buy those yourself and then not go like you might, you know, a Cubs game on a Wednesday.
Well, I don't disagree. Yeah, I think, Kevin, we were talking before the break about, you know, some of the politics is this constant flipping back and forth and changing. I mean, I mean, it's not like I want the same person in office. I mean, I don't. It seems like we're searching for the savior, and the savior's not there. I mean, am I wrong or what?
Well, I think you're right. And if you look at the benches, you know, and let's assume Biden's not going to run for re-election. I can't imagine that he will. I mean, the guy who was sitting at the climate conference sleeping, they had to send somebody over to wake him up.
Yeah.
I can't imagine he will run. if you think of the Democratic and the Republican parties, who is out there where you could really rally around them?
What do you think?
And I look at that and I say, well, I can think of a few Republicans that I really like, but I can't really think of any Democrats that I like, and that's partly me being a biased conservative. But honestly, as I look at them, who do I just like and respect for being really principled? And I don't know the answer. I don't know what to think about that.
Well, the thing I look for, and it's never going to happen. I mean, in anybody's lifetime, including mine. I mean, I would like to see somebody run. I don't care what party it is. I don't care what they look like. I don't care if they're male or female. I don't care what color they are. I would like somebody with some sort of I won't say a newspaper column, and some sort of things that they have written where they actually put their thoughts down on some solutions that are slightly out of the box, not crazy. Some sort of a coherent way to, this is what we're going to do. Sort of like if we're building a car, a railroad car, where do we start? Where do we think we are? And where do we want to get? And how do we get there? I mean, I don't want to use my own, but every morning I look at everybody's positions and I go, they're not exactly what I want. Here's what I'd like today. How do I get from A to B? I mean, I don't see any cohesive plan. If I vote for a Democrat right now, I have no idea what that party stands for, other than some of the crazy stuff that's happening by individual people. And in Republicans, to me, it's more the same.
Well, but it's legislation that they're trying to pass. There's a lot of critical mass behind the legislation they're trying to pass. So it does have a lot of support, but it doesn't have enough. Allegedly, Pelosi is saying she's going to bring the spending bills to the floor today, but I'm betting you they wind up cancel it.
You know, Kevin, here's at the risk of being I might as well be grumpy. At the risk of being grumpy, all I see, I'm almost at a point where, and this is really dumb to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I almost don't even have to read the friggin' bill. If I went from page to page, all I'm going to see is, because I'm pretty good at reading. One page, I'll be able to look at some industry and realize they had a lobbyist on it. It's a total give out to people who have access, from people's money who don't have access. Every one of these bills, it doesn't matter whether a Democrat or Republican is in there. The same people, the same lobbyists, just flip the T-shirt on like we used to do at Notre Dame. It's either the gold side or the blue side, depending on what team you're on in intramurals. That's all that's happening. I mean, I want something from somebody who sees a world that's a little bit different than that says, here's what we want to be in 10 years, and here's how we're going to get there. And by the way, just giving money to people who walk into people's office in Washington and ask for it it's not on my radar. I mean, because I see zero difference fundamentally in the cash between the parties. Now, how you get there and who's your front person and who they appeal to, that I get it is all different, or at least sounds different. But the wheat from the chaff, it's the same to me. It's the same people getting the same dough.
Yeah, from where the money goes, that's true. You also have, the social aspects of it all, and whether people are pushing back. Look, that was a big factor in the Virginia election. When they asked people, when they exit polled people, number one was economics, number two was education, and when it comes to education, it was in part the oversized influence of teachers' unions in causing schools to stay closed when they didn't need to be. And part two of that was that when the schools were closed, you have a whole lot of parents who got a load of the curriculum and said, whoa, no, that's not what I want you to teach my kids. They were either looking over the shoulders on the Zoom meetings, or they had to read some of the materials. Do you know when we have the spike? I wish I had the number in my grubby little hands, but I don't. I don't have it off the top of my head. But the spike in homeschooling, you would expect that with all the schools closed, but nobody's going back. The homeschoolers aren't sending their kids back to school now. And and it's because they, you know, its parents want more control over the curriculum. When you have a gubernatorial candidate who goes and says, well, no, the parents shouldn't. That should be left to the professional educators. Uh-uh. The professional educators work for the public. They have to take some direction. Now, you know, and some of it is, you know, it's social, it's race related, it's sexual orientation related, all of those kinds of things where there's a difference between teaching kids to have open minds and pushing agenda. And they have veered into pushing agenda in many cases. And I think parents have gotten a load of that, and there was a big blowback to that.
Oh, I think there is, too.
A big blowback to that in the Virginia election.
I think there is, too. I've heard of people that were watching, you know, they weren't working, they're watching the kids at home doing the Zoom. Even the math, they're going, they're not teaching kids how to add and subtract. What is going on here? I mean, how did this all slip by everybody for 20 years? Nobody paid attention what the kids were learning. All of a sudden, they're appalled.
I can theorize lots of different scenarios on that, you know, from busy lives to, because when you and I were kids, way back then, there were a lot of one person earning the money in the household and the other person, usually the mother, running the household. And you didn't have, as many professional women. You didn't, families were generally single-income families. And as a result, you had a whole lot of mother involvement with school.
Well, I think...
came home. What you got to do your homework before you go out. What do you have? Show me what you have. Show me what you did. You know, those kinds of things. Well, when you come home from work and it's 6:30, 7 o'clock... you have to put a meal on the table after a long day, and it's all you can do to flop down somewhere around 8 or 9 o'clock and let out a deep breath. You're not going to dive into what's going on at the school. So I think that's part of the explanation. Is just things changed socially, and they unchanged in 2020. I think part of it is that, there may be an element of laziness or disinterest or misplaced trust, or, you can come up with a lot of other explanations for that, too. But one way or another, that all changed in 2020, and for the better, I think. I think it was good that so many people got an idea of what their students are being, or what their kids are being taught.
Well, I think that Carl talks about it once in a while. Go through the labor numbers, which we will again this week, by the way, and the idea of no man can do just one thing, and I'm not about to go out on a limb and say, the who should stay home and watch kids, but raising kids is a job. I mean, I've never done it, but I was a kid once, and I know it was a job for my parents, and we were pretty good, it's a serious job. So what they force people to do, I think, in a lot of ways, by the generally countrywide, the median income is not keeping up with the inflation. I mean, you can get one of these bumps on TV to sit there. If I ever wanted to go on TV, which I don't, they could tell me that there's really no inflation. You know what, Kevin? Off the top of my head, I can spin off the 20-year plan, the 40-year plan, the 10-year plan, and five or six items where the CPI is and where people actually, I would have, a house was, in 1980 was, I think, 45 grand median or something. And now it's, what, 350? I mean, we're not, and the CPI is probably up twice, maybe 2.2. Okay, 2.2 times 45 is clearly not 350. I mean, so what you've had to do is you've ended up having to put another person in the house. And in those days, it was always, it was usually the guy working. But now it might not be, because a woman can maybe smarter and make more than a guy easily. But the point is, there's another job at home. Okay, so now you've had to hire a third person, essentially, to watch the kids. And hopefully you're not paying her more than you're making, which would be kind of an odd game. But I think that's happening. So, I mean, so now you have two people making $35,000 a year, and oh, by the way, you're paying somebody at home, you know, $25,000 or whatever it is. I mean, because, Maddie, what's the hourly wage up for a nanny? Is it 20 now? Well, 20 is 40 grand a year, right?
Yeah, I don't know what the hourly wage is, but I can tell you, looking at daycares, they range from, for full-time infant care, from $1,900 a month in a bad neighborhood up to $2,700 a month in a good neighborhood, which is a second mortgage, which is that's a tough decision to make.
So 36 grand when the medium wage is 36 grand, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
So you're not really gained, but obviously we need kids, we need families, or else we need families.
Yeah. But most families most will do it. Or I don't even want to say most. You have groups of families where both parents work because both parents want, you know, have professional aspirations, whether they absolutely need to or not. You have others, though, and a very large number, where both parents have full-time jobs because they need the money.
Right.
They really don't have a choice. And so now you start looking at the daycare scenarios that Matt described, and, you know, as you look at it and say, what's daycare, what's it cost in a good neighborhood, what's it cost in a bad neighborhood, what's it cost in a high-end place that really will nurture the kids, and where I have some input in how it does, and how, you know, how much of it is, hey, I just need someone to keep my kids safe for the day, the rest I'm not going to worry too much about. You know, we put people in situations where they have to make really, you know, I don't want to say distasteful, but very difficult choices around that, and you wind up having to trust people. You wind up trusting people to have your kids' best interest at heart, and they don't always.
Well, and the cost of work, I mean, when I was in grammar school, St. John Fisher, by the way, a lot of people are moving back in that neighborhood and remodeling homes because they want that sort of same experience where, you know, school's not that expensive, school's pretty good, and kids walk home for lunch. But there were a lot of teachers, the lay teachers, Kevin, are all women, obviously. I don't think there was any guys. The music teacher was a guy. But they would have, you know, they might teach sixth grade, and they might have two kids in second and third grade. And by the way, they all walk the two blocks home for lunch, walk back, so that you could be the mother, unless one of them was sick, and still work. You didn't need a car. So your entire salary, as little as it probably was totally accretive. Right? So, I mean, you could do all those things. Not saying that that's the way the world should be. I'm just saying it worked out so, even if they made $5,000 a year, which I don't know if they did, it was a real $5,000, right? Because you didn't have to hire somebody to watch the kids, you didn't have to get a car, you didn't do all that other stuff, right? So, but now I mean, if you have to go out and buy a used car for $10,000 if you can find one, pay all the money for the taxes and the leases and all the other kind of crap that goes with them—not leases, stickers. You better be making. What do you think, Manny? You got to be making at least 60 to make it worthwhile for the second person in the house to go to work. If you're paying the three grand a month to have the kids, and even then, you're going to wonder at the end of the year why you even did it, because you're right back where you started from money wise.
Yeah, I would say more than 60.
Yeah, but I said at least.
Yeah, but at least, yeah, no doubt. I mean,
let's throw in there though that there is another reason to hold down a job, and that is because you will fall behind career wise.
Yes.
You know, when you get to the point where you're ready, when the kids are ready to be more on their own, and they're older, you don't want to be 15 years behind everybody else in pursuing your career. So that becomes a factor too for people who have professional aspirations. There's a lot tied up in it, and it's not an easy solution, but you know, the end result is that we have turned over a lot of the raising of our kids to school systems, and the school systems are not necessarily raising our kids the way that many parents want their kids raised.
Well, I'm gonna I'll turn it, not turn it, but I'm gonna say, for me, Kevin, what I see And I do this for the show, obviously, but I go through all these numbers on a weekly basis, and it's extremely obvious to me that whoever we have running, whether it's the Asian lady in Boston or the black guy here or the white guy here, to me, I see no sense of any of these people of the numbers I'm going through. Now, there's other stuff that I'm sure they know that I never even thought I was supposed to know when it comes to being politics and so forth. And I'm sure they know who got them some vote here and who got them some vote there. But I'm saying that the basic knowledge of what is happening to this society economically for the last 40 years, I think, is seriously wanting in virtually everybody we have in office. That I could give a test to every one of them and it all flunk. And I think, and it's not, I'm not saying on a given day that that's the most important thing on their mind. It probably shouldn't be. But over a period of 40 years, you should just recognize it. Now Biden somewhat recognizes a little bit of it. You know, we gotta make sure that people who are under a certain poverty line, or not poverty line, income line, need help with child support. Okay. I figured that out. People on this show figured it out 15 years ago when we started doing broadcasting, for God's sake. It's been right in front of everybody's face for four decades. Now, is the solution to tell your buddy at the Federal Reserve to print up money and send checks to people when it's not being taxed, it's not being grown into, it's not being borrowed, we're just gonna print it up, and oh, by the way, this nebulous tab that everybody has that some stupid economist that you just hired tells you don't worry about how much you go into debt, it doesn't make any difference. Well, that's so friggin' ignorant I can't go there, Kevin. But that's the policies. Now, they've at least identified that it's a problem for somebody making 30 grand to pay somebody to take care of their kids. Well, duh. You think?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we've woken up. Oh, man, it's pretty tough for somebody to do that. It's like, you know, I don't know. But I don't see any, what I'm looking for, Kevin, is from the party or a third party where they come up and they say, these are the 10 things we are going to try and accomplish that we see as a problem. And you know.
Yeah, you are looking for somebody to articulate a vision of what they're trying to do.
Yes.
And then as you go do it, the next thing is that you always, always, always have to take the time and say, remember, we were talking about, you know, what this is going to look like at the end of my 4 years in office, as an example. What are we going to accomplish over that period of time? And then every time you do something, you have to very, very patiently and consistently say, this is how this moves us one step closer to what I told you I was going to do when you elected me. This is kind of your leadership 101 stuff that people just don't do. And it's unfortunate, because even if you were doing a lot of right things and doing a lot of good, if you don't take that time, if you don't, you know, lay it out really well for people, they're just going to see everything you do as a random series of unrelated events.
Well, you assume that they're going to read the stuff as well instead of just take their twit
bit.
Well,
yeah, and you know, we're going to vote on a bill that hasn't been written yet.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what's laying out there now. They're still negotiating what's in there, and it's going to be thousands and thousands of pages. And then when they turn around to vote, Manchin was talking about this last week, saying, you know, you're going to shove a bill in front of me and say, in a few hours, here's the bill. You got to vote. Well, you know how I feel about that. I think every bill should require, if you're going to vote on it, you should be required to sign that you've read every word of it. And that would accomplish a few things. One is people would read the bills, and number two is we'd have shorter bills. We wouldn't put everything into 3,000 pages.
Well, see, I don't want to be a cynic. However, what you could do is what Alan Dean used to do. Alan was a funny guy. If ever there was a controller accountant, he was the controller of CFO of Scoreboard Options Exchange, and one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet. And so what Alan would do when he sent the budget out to the board members, and it wasn't like it was the budget for the U.S. You know, it was probably 50 pages long. He'd tape a dollar bill in there. When the board came in, if somebody didn't say, hey, Alan, what's with the dollar bill? He knew the guy didn't read it. still, yeah. But I mean, you probably could get our congressman to, if they knew there was a buck in there, they'd read it. How's that for a shot? Take care. SP Futures down 3. The SP Futures up 25. Come back. Talk to Mr. Russell Rhodes about the VIX. What's going on with the market? Why all of a sudden the panic in November is no more, or at least not yet. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lower North Bank, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali. This is Brett. We're on the board. S&P Futures down 3. NASDAQ Futures up 23. Russell, how are you?
I'm good. I want to talk about the school thing.
Right ahead. Hey, interesting is before we you want to talk about the school thing, we're going to do that. We want to talk about the volatility since poor Mike broke his leg and he wasn't able to talk about it the other day. You got to cover volatility for him. The other thing I want to mention is everything you and I probably have talked about this, you know, maybe more than most of the other guests, is every little. I mean, I think you have probably better than me a pretty good idea of what it takes to have an economy that actually is chugging along and how we've kind of nipped away at it in the last 25, 30 years. A lot of it going overseas, a lot of things have happened and. They've kind of nipped away at people's earnings power and people away, and nipped away at the skill set, you know, going, and I think we had issues with, you know, small businesses getting loans, even though the Fed's given money to big people, the small businesses can't get loans. I think a lot of people have not been able to save up enough money to where they could actually start a business. I think a lot of people have student loan debt hanging over them where the thought of quitting their job and starting something else means they can't even do it. But I was at my brother had his apple squeezing thing on Saturday, and of course I stopped back on Sunday. You know, you get to see the family twice in 2 days. You actually get to learn something what people are doing. My oldest nephew works for this manufacturing concern, and they'll install conveyor belts and things for people who have in the food processing business, whatever it is. They'll make a lot of that kind of equipment for people. And you know what? The weird part is now that you're not getting a lot of this stuff from overseas, Russell, a lot of kids used to take in high school. I didn't, unfortunately. But you know what there's a huge need for? If you had somebody who, my nephew'd probably have to train him because he's pretty good at it. But if somebody say, I used to get this part from overseas or something broke in my conveyor or something broke in my processing, you know, my big, my plant here. There's these two or three parts have broken. I need them fixed. Nobody knows how to measure the part exactly and put it down on a piece of paper and make a drawing of the part and send it to somebody and say, can you make this? They say, well, I have this part here. Well, can you send me a drawing? How do I do that? How do I measure? Well, how big is it? I don't know. It looks like it's about, no. You got to tell me like by the thousandth of an inch if it's going to go into a machine, for God's sake. Nobody knows how to do that. So my nephew's trying to recruit a couple of people. We're at dinner saying, look, if you want to do something part time after a couple of weeks training, I could almost we could use you. Name your price. I mean, all the skill set and stuff that we never even dreamed was a shortage is a shortage.
Oh, there's a shortage. I think there's a lot of skilled people shortages going around right now. You know, I love where I work. I love Indiana University. I've been with the university officially since August 1st, and last week I got my computer from them because there's a shortage of IT guys. They can make a lot more money working in private industry than working for the university. Also, I told them that I was just going to continue to use my own PC so they could put me at the bottom of the list because I wasn't, like, urgently needing the new laptop. But, yeah, it took just within, you know, a company 10 weeks for me to get my computer set up.
That's pretty good.
And it's a person thing. The computer didn't show up until I'd been there about 3 weeks, but it still showed up before the semester started. So I think there's a lot of, and it's very difficult to fully quantify what that's going to do to inflation other than, you know, push wages higher.
Well, yeah.
So I think any skilled area right now, there's most definitely a shortage, and you can name your price.
Well, if you try and match, let's put it this way, skill sets up with purchasing power from 40 years ago, 20 years ago, virtually every, other than if you're in some management and some monopoly, virtually every other job, I think, has a serious amount of catching up to do. And I think if the worker bees need their wages doubled, the management class needs their wages cut by 50%, and the shareholders need to get some more money through dividends. What needs to be is the major shift I see being needed. Of course, that doesn't mean it's going to happen, Russell. Or do you agree with that at all?
Oh, I think that's what everybody. I as far as the management class getting a 50% cut, maybe I'm kind of part of the management class, and I don't agree with that one. But
well, I mean, it's
I see what you're saying.
I'm saying it's not the idea that you're. Management class at your monopolistic Microsoft or Google or your for sure monopolistic Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas, I'm going to say they're 40% over market price.
I think they're doing very well. That's for darn sure. And I think even at the white collar end of things right now, there's probably a fear of losing somebody because you don't know if you're going to be able to replace them.
Well, yeah,
I think it's at all levels of all labels, all labor levels, including, you know, the non-skilled end of things.
Well, yeah, but they're
practically begging people to come work at a fast food restaurant. And I venture outside of Chicago to the Indiana every week, and I'll be in a mall, and they'll only have one person working in a retail store, and they'll close up for an hour to go to lunch and come back.
What do you make?
Do you ever remember seeing, you know, where businesses would close? Yeah, you know, they'd close up for lunch. You haven't had that for 30, 40 years.
Well, Russell, look at. I mean, I don't know if you were listening last Thursday, probably one when Dan Janitis was in, and Dan's one of the more conservative guys we have on the show in terms of, you know, doesn't really lob his opinion out there too much. But he said he had a buddy that was real interested in this everybody short people routine. So he went around, and they're in Florida. There was help wanted signs everywhere. So the guy collected addresses or phone numbers from 60 of the places that had the help wanted signs. And he sent an application to every single one of them. He only heard back from two. So his conclusion was that it's all, a lot of it's BS, where in the unlikely event somebody wanders by and is willing to work for $10 an hour, you're willing to grab them. But if the guy says, hey, I want 20, the sign stays up. You know, so I think that the day that you're going to get somebody who actually does something useful for you for $10 an hour, that day is long gone. And and every day the Fed pours money in the system, the day is further and further in the rearview mirror, in my opinion.
I'm really looking for. I'm more interested in what's going to happen on Friday, number wise, as opposed to what Powell says today, because I think he's definitely not going to do anything that would damage the financial market. They're just very fixated on the financial market, more than they should be, since the financial markets have nothing to do with the Fed's charge, which is the best employment that they can get and not cause inflation. They're taking their eye off of that ball big time right now.
Russell, when in the course of human events, how's that for a lead-in?
Yeah.
The more I've studied the last time this happened, it obviously there was no change in policy in the Fed and whatever one was when they hired Volcker. There was no change in policy until the inflation got so bizarre that people were that you had everybody complaining about it. You had unions with COLA clauses. You had every contract had a COLA clause in there. It had gone so far that the Fed never on their own ever said, look, we're doing the wrong thing. Even with guys like Milton Friedman running around pointing fingers at him in the news, it didn't matter. They weren't about to stop and I don't know if they were, you know, people were always people, because there were certain people who were benefiting by it. I mean, I don't know if it was all an idea to put the savings and loans out of business because commercial banks wanted that business. I mean, the more I look back on it, the more I start to see, more creepy conspiracy in what happened. It wasn't just a bunch of well-meaning guys just made a mistake. I mean, now I don't believe that. I did back then when I was young. But now this time, is there any chance in hell that these guys change policy before they're overwhelmingly forced to, and Jerome Powell's thrown out of there on a rail, and they have to put somebody back in because they lose a midterm election overwhelmingly because of inflation is now the number one thing in the country, and they're gonna have to try and fight it. I don't see these guys with the backbone, and the people that they're favoring will not let them stop until they absolutely are forced to. I mean, I think it's not just a happen to be a mistake or they think things are going good. These guys are not that stupid. They are not that stupid. They know just what's happening, and they know just what the repercussions are, and they know who's making money off it and who isn't. And the more I look at it, the more I just get this disgusting feeling. And I don't. And am I just getting grumpy, or am I right?
No, I think you're dead right. But I think another way to really think about it, I think we've been in this in the markets for collectively, gosh, I don't even want to do the years on that right now, but collectively a really long time. And I think we both know really smart people that get stuck in really bad trades, and there's almost a paralysis where they just can't do anything. And the best thing to do is bite the bullet and do what you fundamentally know is right and abandon all hope. And I think that's what it's going to take. I think these guys are they believe the transitory because they want that to be true.
But you look what's happened to BBBY this morning. Russell, if you got 10,000 shares of that, and now you're up $9, God's sake, you just made 90 grand. You don't think there's anything wrong with this, do you?
No, not in the least. Not at all.
I mean, so what?
That's not a majority of people.
No, but you could be that. Like, but they control the press. Your buddy Kramer wrote an article the other day, and I can't believe anybody published it. quit fretting about inflation. Buy four companies that will benefit by inflation, and you'll be ahead of the game. Who cares if there's inflation, like, for the rest of the schmucks out there? There's an attitude.
Yeah, didn't he tell us there was nothing wrong with Bear Stearns when the stock was still triple digit?
Yeah,
and I hate people that do that, to bring up a completely unrelated thing, but, you know, I think that goes to his credibility. I don't see anything wrong with buying a few material stocks. That's kind of the only things that I own right now.
Well, we're
I mean, there is some logic, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't worry about inflation.
Well, I mean, if I was in a business, obviously the brokerage business is not one you can just raise prices on people. As a matter of fact, I've definitely go down since we've been in the business. You know, it's not a bad thing necessarily. It's just, I mean, we are clearly not in a business that is going to benefit from inflation. I mean, right? I mean, if I was a guy that was stuck with 50 used cars and all of a sudden they doubled, I mean, I guess I could say this is great policy, but I know in my heart of hearts, it really isn't great policy, but that doesn't mean that some people aren't going to benefit. I mean, who was the guy people came out yesterday? Was it, Mondelez? They came out and said, there's inflation issues, but so far, they were able to raise their prices more than the inflation has affected them, and they had a great quarter. Well, I mean, you think the Fed doesn't know that? I mean, some people are winners and some people are losers?
Oh, I'm sure they're aware of that. I just, you mentioned, I'm wondering if a potential catalyst, and we're past this quarter, but I wonder if when we start getting fourth quarter earnings in January, and you hear companies, their margins are getting squeezed because they are having a difficult time passing on the cost to their customers, because it looks like the economy is slowing at the same time right now. Maybe that's what gets us in enough trouble that the Fed has to take action.
Name me five industries that you think they can't raise prices as much as the prices are coming to them. I just named one, the brokerage industry. I'm going to say, I've watched Lowe's and Home Depot go up every friggin' day. They've doubled since this stuff is... you can't tell me that they aren't the biggest winners. They've managed over a 30-year period to become a quasi-cartel, and now they have all kinds of pricing power. Now, clearly, if it gets to a point where people stop remodeling their houses, but they're not even close to being at that point. Yet.
No.
I mean, I think the food stores are the same way. I think they can raise prices enough to where...
I think grocery stores could. I question whether restaurants can.
I question whether some can, some can't. If you got a good lease, you're probably okay. If you just put, you know, $2 million into a place to remodel it 2 years ago, you probably got a problem if you got a bad lease. But the auto companies, they're selling how many less cars? They raised, but they're selling them for over a list. They're happy as a clam. They don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have a place where your margins are 10% and all of a sudden you can make your margins 30%, guess what? You can sell 2/3 less things and still be ahead of the game, right?
Still make some money. Yeah.
But how is it nobody even does this math anymore? I mean, would you have signed? I didn't see what the final thing was. Why didn't, I mean, they must have guys, they pay a lot of dough. Why didn't John Deere call us up and say, this inflation's coming out here, what should be in this contract? If those guys signed a deal for a 5.4% raise after 3 years without a COLA clause in there, you gotta fire that union. I mean, what's wrong with those people?
Yeah, that they're not taking advantage of right now.
Not taking advantage, you're defending yourself. Well, they didn't even defend themselves. Well, there's a chance that, in my opinion, more than a chance, that by next March, we're going to get maybe 2 and 3 in a row of at least 1% raises per month in the CPI. Now, your 5.4% raise you just fought for and went on strike to do for your guys over a 3-year period, you just pissed it away in 3 months. Or where am I?
No, you're not wrong at all. In fact, you say March. I know that the derivative market is pricing at the first hike in June now. And I wonder if that, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if that gets sped up.
No, here, but I mean, here, Here's what I'm talking about. These guys are so far in nano land that they think a quarter or half a point over like a 3 month period is going to make any difference. That's still expansionary. They got to go up 3 points just to be neutral.
Yeah, we had this discussion in my last class for my first quarter last night, and they said, well, what is a rate hike? And I said, it's 0.25%. So it's nothing.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I know, but still psychologically, it's the direction that you're going, and that would be the direction going higher. Other countries have already started. Other central banks have recognized inflation and already bit the bullet of that a little bit and started to raise rates. We're kind of behind the curve on it, and I think the reason that we're so behind the curve on it and companies aren't reacting in a way that you would expect is because it's been so long since we've really had to deal with inflation.
Well, Russell, what do you suppose happened? You're closer to these numbers because I have trouble finding them these days. What do you suppose happened the last 3 or 4 days? Now, we're going into a Fed meeting where they've telegraphed they're going to do some kind of taper, okay? So we had our long-term, our 10-year rates go from, 1.4-something to 1.6. So a little bit in that direction. We had the European rates go from minus 0.15 to minus 0.07 or something. So a little bit in that direction. And we had Japan go from positive 0.07 to positive 0.10. Again, slightly in that direction. Something what you would, you and I might say it should be going faster or that's, that doesn't cut it. But the fact is it was dribbling in the right direction from where we think policy is going to head. All of a sudden, we've got them flying back the other way. That ours is back down to 1.52. Europe has gone from 0.08 negative to 0.14 negative in like the last 2 days. Same way with Japan. What of these guys, did they all get on the phone the other day and say too soon? Or somebody told us too much, keep buying? How much did they buy the last 2 days to drive these things back against the tide like that? I mean, something had to happen.
Yeah, active bond managers that are trying to make money, I mean, are they really stepping in and buying bonds right now with the anticipation that we're going to have lower rates? Because that's what it would take, and you got to think that the Fed can't do all that on its own.
I don't know, $80 billion in 1 week, not last week, the week before, that's a lot of dough. I don't know, it's a big market, but still, it's, what is that, $15 billion a day?
Unfathomable, isn't it?
Tough for the Russell Chief partnership to say, no, these things are going the other way.
Yeah.
That's
one of our little Wall Street sayings, and there's a reason for it. Don't fight the Fed.
Well, plus you can't fight them if the minute they're going to call, their buddies or two or three people to do the buying for them, once they know they're buying, they're buying too. Right? Because they're going to buy it so they can sell it to the Fed. I mean, it's not just the money the Fed puts in, right? It's a huge multiplier effect. All right, hey, you want to talk about the school stuff?
I do, man. I was on a school board for 4 years. I know all about this stuff.
Did your school board have what do they call it? Were you trying to pull a guy out in the middle? It's a recall election. Did they have one of those for you?
No, they didn't, but I damn near quit a couple of times.
If there had been a recall petition, would they have signed one for you?
Oh, I'm sure they would have. It doesn't take much out where I live to make people upset.
I guess not.
It just doesn't. And, it doesn't take much. And I would get ripped on at dinner parties. It just got to where I just didn't leave the house anymore.
Well, at some point with these elections...
And really, everything I did, I just felt like I was doing for the good of the majority. I specifically voted for things that were not good for one of my kids. But it was good for the majority. Whereas there was a guy on the board that his kid was really big into orchestra, and we were trying to figure out what extracurriculars to cut. I didn't even know we had orchestra, because he wouldn't even bring... he wouldn't even let us talk about cutting it. Because it was for his kid.
Ah.
But the high level stuff, the reason that the curriculum's gotten so goofy is back, and I'm going to just totally point a finger on this one. During the Obama administration, they encouraged nationwide Common Core, you know, where everybody was going to get the same education, public education, whether you were the poorest inner city school or one of the nicer suburbs of Chicago. And the state dictates each, you know, basically dictates what you learn in the classroom. That's why the common, or the critical race theory thing is such a state issue, because that's where it really is supposed to get dictated. But if you're a state and you didn't agree to what the Obama administration wanted you to teach as far as Common Core, you didn't get any federal funds for your public schools anymore.
But now the Common Core is not what you and I might think the Common Core would be. To me, it would be all the basics of writing and arithmetic. And
there were some goofy ways to go about teaching it.
Well, you know, Russell, but since you're involved in this.
But it was a federal government working their way into local schools that really did cause some issues with the curriculum. And there were certain states, like Texas, that said, fine, we just won't take any federal money anymore.
You remember Tom Foley, the guy who he was the Speaker of the House for a while?
When I was
on the board, he came to one of the breakfasts at the SIBO, and I came up out of the pit and I went to lunch or breakfast. You know, he had the little rubber eggs and so forth, and he said one of the goofy market makers was giving him a third degree about education, and he said, well, the federal government's really not very involved in education. We subsidize this, we subsidize that, but we're not. Because he had some huge number, like 20,000 school districts in the country that eventually do all that stuff. He goes, do you want us to be like France? And of course, the dopey market maker had no idea what he was talking about. I didn't either. And he goes, in France, everybody in the country on the same day, on a Tuesday, teaches the same class. It's all centrally planned, which I suppose has its strengths and weaknesses, where at least, you know, everybody in the country is learning how to multiply on such and such a day. But, like you say, it has its weaknesses as well, you know. You're saying we're moving, or the Obama administration tried to push us more toward that model where you at least all had to teach something.
Right. And what it generally did was it created the situation where the same sixth grade math is supposed to be taught to all sixth graders. Well, what ended up happening was you had a really sharp math mind that would take seventh or eighth grade math, or maybe even eighth graders that would get sent over to the high school to start taking high school math early. They just started bumping them off to the next grade, but, you know, teaching the average student something that was at a lower end than it used to be. They really did. It was more of bringing, it's like you said earlier, when you said management needs to get cut by 50% and worker bees need to get a big raise, they did the same thing as far as how stringent the curriculum was.
Okay, well, let's just talk about more about after break. Let's go. S&P futures now down 550, NASDAQ futures up 15. So quiet and mixed ahead of the Fed meeting, announcement, and press conference. Be right back, Stockton Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 online on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it is time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 650. NASDAQ futures, down 650. NASDAQ futures up 875. And we have, we'll get to the Dow here. I'm reading about, funny, Maddie, how we just were talked about Mondelez, how they, in their report, they said they were able to raise prices more than, inflation hit them, so they had a great quarter here this morning. Oreo cookies, Ritz crackers, and what are Sour Patch Kids?
Oh, the best movie theater candy ever.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're going up 7% from them on the wholesale level. Raising the price of Oreos, that is un-American. I'm sorry.
You know, I, as a free market guy, I don't have a problem with people finding the competitive price on things. I don't care if people raise prices. As long as it's competitive, there's 500 other cookies out there. I won't buy Oreos if they're too expensive.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a minute. Now this is giving me a whole new line of questioning here for our professor. Dow futures down 56. Again, we're talking about BBBY is up, well, not only $8, it was up $9.50, $24.74. They cut some kind of a deal with Kroger, and they're doing something online, and oh, by the way, they had a short squeeze on top of everything else. But, okay, around the rest of the world, we've got, again, a Fed is meeting today, second day, announcement I think is 1 o'clock, the news conference is, what, 1:30 or 2? Russell, somewhere in there. DAX up 5, call that flat. FTSE down 33.5%. CAC around up 9.1%. For Asia, we've got Nikkei down 126. That's 0.4%. Shanghai down 7.2%. Hang Seng down 74.3%. So lower, but not very much across the board over in Asia. Yesterday, Dow was up 138. S&P up 16. NASDAQ up 53. I think all at new records. New records. Bonds, 1.54 in a 10-year. The Bund, minus 0.17. They had the biggest move the last couple of days, percentage-wise. Japan, positive 0.077, so call it 0.08. We've got oil, down $1.99. It's up 2.4%, 81.92. Brent down $1.75. It's 2%, 82.97. Natural gas unchanged at 5.53. RBOB down 6 cents, 2.38. I'm going to run out and fill up the Suburban. We've got gold down 370 to 1785. Silver, however, up 13 cents, 2364. Copper up 3 cents, 439. And we've got Bitcoin down 656 to 62,833. So back off that 63,000-plus number we've been the last couple days, but not that far off. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking pretty solid here on our area expressways, roadways, and tollways on a Wednesday morning. We do have traffic building on the Edens and Kennedy, but as to be expected, same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. But all four of those expressways have remained accident-free. Southside has been looking great all morning. Normal traffic times coming in on the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. And Lakeshore Drive is good in both directions. Only issues to report, we have one on the west side of the city, Pulaski between Lake and Carroll. There's a structure fire that has emergency crews on the scene. And then out in the western suburbs, Route 83, which is Kingery Highway at St. Charles Road, there is an accident as well. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but cold, blustery temperatures as it's been all week. We'll reach a high of just 45. Right now it is clear and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 60. In sports, the Atlanta Braves are your 2021 World Series champions. They shut out the Astros in Houston last night, winning 7-0 and taking the series 4-2. NBA basketball, Bulls are back in action tonight as they were off last night. They'll be in Philadelphia to take on the 76ers. That's a 6 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. Bulls have the best record in the NBA at 6-1. Suns beat the Pelicans last night, 112-100. Blackhawks were off last night as well. They'll host the Carolina Hurricanes at the United Center. That's a 7 p.m. Central Time puck drop. Coyotes did play. They were shut out by the Flyers, 3-0. Chief.
I still can't warm up to that Pelicans name.
I don't mind the Pelicans name. There's other names I don't like, though. For example, I hate the name the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't know why. I just hate it. I don't like the fact that the Utah Jazz are called the Jazz when there couldn't be a less jazzy place on earth than Utah.
Yep. Oh yeah.
That bothers me. There's a lot of names I don't like. The Pelicans, it makes sense. It's geographical. There's Pelicans everywhere down in the bayou, and they call them the Pels. I don't mind that one at all.
It's more of a Florida name.
Ah, there's Pelicans all over Louisiana.
That's true. If you go to Naples, it's Pelican this, Pelican that.
That's
Pelican.
True. That whole sort of Gulf area, there's a lot of Pelicans. I'm cool with the Pelicans name.
They're pretty cool looking birds.
They're awesome. Yeah. Especially when they stand on one leg.
Yeah. And they stand there looking at you, standing on like the little dock post, staring at you like, what's with these idiots? Explain to me, when this happens, Russell, I mean, Maddie just brought up a point and we're going to expand on his point. There's when why do prices, you know, go up? And here's my problem. Well, one of my many problems. My problem with the way the pricing is going up now is, to me, it follows like a real long time of concentration in a lot of industries. When you think there's competition, there really isn't. I mean, you go down the aisle, and I shop at the Myers a lot, but most of the aisles now, depending on the store, they're being stocked by the people from that deliver the stuff. We don't bring the stuff in your back room anymore and have the stock boys like I was when I was a ute. All of a sudden, you we're going to do this aisle tonight.
I think there's only segments of the store that
right,
where that's
right.
True.
You're
right. It's a mix. I used to be one of those guys from Frito-Lay.
I think it's your booze aisle for sure.
Your booze aisle and your potato chip aisle, like Russell just said, those are absolutely stocked by the vendors.
Bread aisle.
And probably bread and buns in that area. But a lot of your stuff, I mean, your canned goods, I think those are all stocked by the store. And
you are correct.
I mean, and your produce, I think, is all stocked by the store.
But what about, like, when we talk about the Mondelez, now they are going to go. I'm asking you guys questions because you brought them up. Right there, according to this article by Sarah Witten in CNBC, they're going to raise their prices by about 7%. All right, so I assume that's out the door. They must deliver it someplace. So somebody's picking this up 7% higher. That doesn't mean it's only going to be 7% on the shelf, right? I mean, somebody's going to have to, whether it's Myers or Walmart or whatever, they're going to look and see what else. They may decide, okay, I got to pay people more, or I just think I can get more. I'm going to say that the price on the shelf is going to be at least 10, but now that's totally a guess. Now, the question comes down, if, like Maddie says, like where I shop on a Sunday morning when everybody else is asleep, everybody else meaning Audrey and the two dogs. By the way, speaking of which, This could be a really bad week. The poodle might be toast.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
We lost a pug over the weekend.
Really?
Oh, man. That's
that's horrible.
Yeah.
And 20 years is a while, you know, for and this guy's been right next to her for 20 years. I mean, talk about the best little dog. But anyway, it's not a question is what price is going to be on the shelf. Now, at the Myers, there's a Jewel across the street. If you go 2 miles one way, there's they get a whole paycheck and what's the other guy? Mariana's. And then 2 blocks the other way, there's a new Caputo's. So, and then if you really want to go a little bit, you can go to a Walmart. So, I mean, they can't get sort of too out of line. I mean, because, you know, the,
Exactly.
But now what if it's the Walmart in the town, there isn't anything else around for 10 miles?
Well, that's what I was going to say is it's cool when there's an easy substitute or an easy place you can go, you know, like across the street, like you said. But when it becomes things that there's not an easy substitute or you're kind of, for lack of a better way to say, stuck with, such as, you know, you're stuck filling up your behemoth every Sunday morning. You'll have a couple of choices, but they're all pretty much going to price in line with each other. It'll be interesting to see what happens with people's utility bills, especially if we have an awful winter in our neighborhood. You know, the energy cost there is going to go up a lot too. And you're not really going to have a decent substitute around it. So, yeah, I got no problem with Oreos going up a bit because I can always switch back to chocolate chip cookies. But, you know, there are certain things that you just have to pay for.
But
those things are going to go up with everything else, and we're not really going to have an alternative. And the thing is, our purchasing power is not going to keep pace. It hasn't.
No.
We were talking about a big transaction that occurred in 1990. And my kid was like, well, you know, what would that be in today's dollars? Yeah, I pulled a little Google thing up. A dollar from 1990, according to Google, is $2.12 today. I don't believe that. I don't believe that, you know, stuff has only doubled since I was finishing college.
Well, it allegedly is...
In fact, I know that it hasn't. I know that a similar apartment that I got when I first moved to Chicago is about 3 times what it was, you know, now relative to the early 90s.
College tuition has to be like 6 times.
Oh, geez.
I can tell you exactly, because I actually did this on a rainy weekend. From 2000... Sure. From 2000 college tuition, this is till last year before the COVID, it's roughly up 2.85 times. That's since 2000.
Yeah, and he was talking 1990. So,
I will give you guys. Well, while you guys keep talking, I'll do some of the calculations here. But I guess the question is, it's at some point, like to your point, Maddie, in some areas. Mondelez raises the price of the Oreos. Stick on the Oreos for a second. 7%. Now, at best case, the Myers is going to say, well, I guess it could go the other way, but it won't. They're going to say, it used to be a dollar, now it's $1.07 in the aisle. We're just going to pass through that's probably the best you're going to get, right? So, now the question is, does Myers say, well, we might as well make it $1.10 or $1.12. So now you're up to 12%. And now, right down the aisle is somebody else's chocolate chip cookies, as one of you guys said. Now, does the chocolate chip guy say, oh, good, now we're 10% cheaper than those guys, we're going to sell more? Or do they say, hey, we've been waiting, we're looking for this chance ourselves, why don't we raise ours 12% as well, so we're now in line? I mean, and what I'm saying is, when the Fed's doing what they're doing, you're going to get more of B than you are of A.
Yeah.
I know, but isn't that... Isn't that the whole point of a competitive economy? When you're talking about cookies and there's 500 different cookie options or dessert options, you can go to Fig Newtons, you can go to ice cream, you can go to crackers, you can go to whatever you want. That's the whole point. At some point, people are going to stop wanting to pay that and they'll go to an alternative.
They'll push up.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... Now, when it's not competitive, like Russell said earlier, and like you know, obviously, then it's different. But in this case, I don't care if all of them decide to go up because at some point... people are going to stop paying it, and they're going to have to go back down, and that's sort of the whole point of a working economy.
Okay, what
as
I'm,
you've explained all the time.
Right, what I'm going to say is I'm going to bet you that in the cookie aisle versus the IGA that used to be in our neighborhood, you find less brands of cookies now in a Walmart than I used to find in that store with way less manufacturers.
I don't doubt that. Yeah, I don't know.
By the way, $1 in 2000 is worth, according to the CPI, again, which we all think is bark. What do you think their number is?
$1.80
From 2000
yeah.
to now, a dollar. I'll say $1.60
Very very close. $1.58 Only because you've probably heard me mention that before.
I hadn't, but
what's the? Because I was stunned too. I thought it was higher than that too. I would have guessed the $1.80 You were saying 1990, Russell.
He said
yeah,
218.
It was, I feel like $2.12 is sticking in my mind.
208. 208. And it, but this is the one that absolutely frosts me.
I owe you four cents. Then.
Okay. 1980, this is the one that frosts me. 329. And I'm going to say in 1980, a median house was 45 to 50, and now it's 3.25. So that's a little more than 3.29, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say a car in 1980, a nice car, an Oldsmobile Rocket was probably 4,200, and now they're what? Median price of cars, the average price of cars is 40. So that's not 3, it's like 10. We're not even close on this stuff.
No. No.
And an average, what would you say the median wage was in 1980? I bet you could find that. You're better at this than me. I'm going to say there's no way in hell that's up three times, not to mention the 10 and other stuff we were just talking about. So that's what's caused people's wives to have to work.
Median wage in 1980, according to Google, is $21,020.
And now it's 37?
Yeah.
All right, so it's up.
That hasn't doubled.
No, sure, it has not doubled.
A house basically is just about 2 times of the median salary.
Right. That's those are the kind of when I was talking with Kevin earlier. I mean, those are the kinds of basic problems that I don't see anybody on either side of the aisle even addressing. Right? I mean, I guess it's nice that now instead of having a bunch of old white guys that don't know what they're doing in government, we now have a bunch of everybody else in government. We have a greater smorgasbord of people that don't know what they're doing. I mean, I guess that's progress. But, somehow these basic things have to change because that's why people are pissed off the economy. That's why people are pissed off the politics. It's why we're breaking apart, I think, honestly, both you guys, is that the economics are grabbing people and every single day it's a problem. I mean, to an awful lot of people.
I mean, it's gonna get worse. Where I think it's an annoyance right now, but if people aren't, I can see Christmas being a catalyst, where people just can't buy the normal amount of loot for their kids, or can't find the normal amount of loot for their kids, or end up paying a premium just to get them whatever it is they feel like they've got to get them. And then I can really see it kicking in the spring and people realizing it. Yeah, that March date is when we start the 2-year anniversary, the beginning of COVID. And, the transitory thing doesn't hold water anymore after 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it doesn't hold water unless they can tell me.
I don't think it holds water at all right now, but for the average person, I don't think it will hold water anymore after it's been a couple of years.
Well, if you were, you would have done well, because he was actually very much like you in a lot of ways, Milton Friedman. I think that's a compliment for you, by the way. You couldn't, if you were in his class, you couldn't just open your pie hole and say, I think it's going to be transitory. He's going to say, all right, fine. If that's your opinion, Mr. Rhodes, by the way, by tomorrow, bring me back in here, go to the library, bring me back 15 cases in the world economics since Caesar was alive where any inflation that's taken 3 or 4 years to get started ever was over in a month. And I think you'd be hard pressed to actually back that opinion up.
I wonder if at the beginning of World War II, when we really started getting involved, if, you know, the initial increase in prices, if any of the powers that be were saying, oh, well, this is just transitory as we ramp up for the war.
Well, how did you, you know, we should talk about that. You know what? I'd love to have you on with a.
I got a book on my shelf. It's The Economics of World War II. Of course, it's 150 miles away from me right now, but I know what I'm reading this weekend.
Sports page?
No, The Economics of World War II.
How do you? Here's a question. If you were going to write that book, which you have written books, so you're certainly capable of, how would you break out all the stuff you couldn't buy, rubber versus the stuff that was priced? I think they had
price control.
Price control. Yeah. How do you break all that crap out to get to the kernel of truth?
I don't know if you create a trend line that goes from the beginning of price controls to the end and say, here's what it would have really been, or, you know.
There had to be a black market.
Yeah, there'd have to be a black market, but also you'd think that wages would be, well, I guess, you know, they probably could have just capped wages as well.
Well,
I got to read the book.
Well, but here's a simple question. And Maddie's a streetwise sort of person. What if you have a price at which people basically can't get stuff, and there's a black market price? Which one do you use?
Depends on, again, I think we circle back to, you know, unless you're totally addicted to Oreos, you're not going to go on the black market to get your Oreos.
I know people who are. I know people that are addicted to Oreos, by the way.
Yeah, if you I dated somebody whose nickname was Oreo because she loved them.
God,
she ate them with wine.
One of the guys who used to trade for me.
Her nickname among my friends was Oreo Merlot.
Well, remember to buy.
That actually sounds pretty good. Oreos and wine.
God. Well, the used to get the package, and then there were what, the two or three sleeves in the package, right?
Yeah.
One of the
guys
used to trade for me. We'd have a meeting in the morning. He'd eat an entire sleeve of coffee before he went down to trade.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
I assume he's dead now?
I don't know. I haven't heard from him in a long time. He married some model from Denmark, and I went to the wedding. It was pretty neat. So, Russell, how do you, and just in terms of, and now we have, you know, the idea we've offloaded, you know, a lot of this labor to China, which was one of the causes of labor not keeping up here. And it's caused like a lot of imbalances, I think, in sizes of companies. It's caused imbalances everywhere. Is there any, and a lot of stuff that you read, is there any going back from that? I mean, the DuPont's buying some firm, and then, one of the drug companies bought yet another firm. I mean, is there ever any going back from that? There's only one time I ever saw this stuff broken up, and it was like 1973 when the airlines, the trucking companies, and the SIBO, essentially, you know, they threw the sand in the eyes of the New York Stock Exchange and said we're going to have a competitive exchange. All that's gone away. There's no competition anymore. It's relentless going the other way. You know, is there ever going to be a Congress again like there was in 1973 that somehow got together with academia and said this is not the way we want to go and we got to break this stuff up and start it all over again? I mean, you don't need another combination in the pharmaceutical industry. I hope these people realize that, but I don't think they do.
I can't imagine that, you know, with as much of an oligopoly that business already is, that we'll see anything like that.
But are we ever going to go back the other way? Because, like, Maddie's looking to get some competition, and then there's in the Oreo aisle. So am I. But
you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a guy, I think he was down in Texas, that used to make the masks and stopped making the masks because he couldn't compete with China. And a reporter asked him, well, why don't you ramp your mask production up, you know, help out the world? And he said, because it will cost me an awful lot to ramp production up. I'll make money off of these masks, but then I'm just going to have to shut everything down again when we get back to normal. I think there's going to have to be a belief that you know, we're not going to allow China to undercut our industry again.
What do you make?
We were going in that direction before the pandemic.
What do you make of...
That's why China created the pandemic right there, to punish us for not, you know, not ordering stuff from them anymore or creating tariffs.
I'm sure there's a few people that would believe that, and I'm not so sure. I don't
believe that.
I think it came from the lab, but I think it was an accident.
I think it was an accident that they tried to cover up, which can... When there's an average, you know, when people are lying about stuff, that's when your brain starts searching for the reason.
And I think we send money. Matter of fact, my significant other, who, well, everybody knows that listens to the show every day, which I don't know how many people do, but every single day, they heard the goose story, how she rescued the goose from the street that got whacked by the car.
Uh-huh.
I mean, so we're talking over the top animal. Well, the thing flying around the right wing pages this weekend is we're giving money to some group in China that starves beagles and lets bugs eat the beagles so we can, and of course, she's all over this. Like, you know, I think we send money to a lot of these places. I mean, there's no support.
I think there was U.S. money that was going to the lab in Wuhan. I don't think there is anymore.
Well, you only got 30 seconds, nope. But next time you're in, I want to talk a little bit to you about Carl thinks that we need to have a tariff that if we can't have 14-year-old people working here, and we can't just ship stuff to another country and have people working there. So there needs to be a tariff on that and on pollution. And I agree, too. How could that ever be workable, though? How would you ever do it?
You can only do it if the other side of it is an open society, and that ain't China.
Right.
That's right.
But we have to change here. I mean, I went to the Michigan City, the mall, which is mostly closed now, but there's one store, isn't it? It's the Nike store. And there's massive amounts of kids. I mean, most of them are African-American, but not, you know, 60%, not like it's 100%. What if you put up, now we're talking about, you know, the woke movement and all this other kind of stuff. What if I got a bullhorn and said, well, you know, by the way, in China, these shoes are made from people that are 14 years old and or people that have been enslaved from the Uyghurs or whatever. Would anybody step out of line? Or would we not even care?
No. They don't care.
Well, how... Okay.
They don't care. I care.
I do, too.
And I don't buy Nike. I, honest to God, I don't buy Nike stuff for that very reason.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I'm also aware that there's a good chance that, you know, my Adidas and my New Balance will probably have the same sort of situation.
Yeah,
but I know for a fact that Nike does. Plus, I think they're extremely hypocritical.
Oh, I'm with you. Russell, take care of yourself. Read that book so you can tell us about it next week, bud.
I got homework.
And then lend it to me. SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures up 15. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.